This interview is sponsored by Grasshopper, the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love because you can use your own phones and manage it on the web. Check out grasshopper.com. It's also sponsored by WooFoo, where you can go right now to get embeddable forms and surveys that you can add to your website for free. Go to WooFoo.com. And it's sponsored by Shopify. When you go to Shopify.com, you can create a store within minutes and have all the support and features that you need to make that store grow. Check out Shopify.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. I got a guy you're all familiar with, Joel Spolsky. He is the co-founder of Fog Creek and the co-founder of Stack Exchange. Stack Exchange is what we're going to be talking about today. It's a question and answer platform. I built Mixergy's question and answer platform on the platform. I built Mixergy's question and answer site on the platform that Joel co-founded, Stack Exchange, as have a couple of other people who've been here on Mixergy. And Joel, you've got a little bit of news. What's going on?
Well, I guess you got the scoop here because I noticed that it's not quite live on the Stack Exchange blog yet. But basically, we're making three changes. Maybe I should give people some background. There's probably a lot of people watching
who've
never even heard of us. The first site we created was called Stack Blog. So we're going to get answers to their questions. And the goal with Stack Overflow, I don't know how to say this politely, was to wipe out Experts Exchange, if you've ever seen that site. The Experts Exchange is a site where programmers did this sort of community Q&A kind of thing. And the owners of that site, for whatever reason, slapped a paywall in front of it. And so programmers for years have been typing questions into Google, getting told that there was an answer at Experts Exchange, and then being asked to sign up for a monthly, $20 a month membership or whatever it was. And I just thought that programmers could do a lot better than that. And we could build something for ourselves that wasn't behind a paywall, for example. So together with Jeff Atwood, we built a site called Stack Overflow. It went live, I guess, 18, 19 months ago. So it was basically September of 2008 that site went live. And we have grown in those short, less than 2 years, from zero to about 6.5 million monthly unique visitors, according to Quantcast. So absolutely huge growth, and pretty much most, it's been a long time since I met a programmer that doesn't use Stack Overflow, either as an active user answering questions or just sort of passively, searching for things on Google and finding their results on Stack Overflow.
All right, I want to ask you about why
that's
grew,
what it is. It's a question and answer.
Sorry, we've got a little bit of a lag. As long as we're telling the story before we get to the news, I'll spend a little time asking you why it grew, but I also want to ask you something I've always wondered. What's the problem with Expert Exchange? So they want to make some money, they want to charge people. Why is that such a problem that you've made this your big mission?
It's weird. They have the only programmer content site on the entire internet that you have to pay for. Normally, programmers are pretty generous with their time and with helping each other by answering questions. And it's very unusual to find a site where there's a private company that's trying to basically make money off of programmers answering each other's questions and not make money sort of incidentally by putting up ads or something like that, but actually making money by charging for access to questions which were provided by the community themselves. So I think that this is basically, like any paywall on the internet, it's basically a blemish, and the internet, the internet routes around, sees this as damage and routes around it, and that's what we did with Stack Overflow.
Now, you charge for your software. Why is it okay to charge for software but not access to a place where people can exchange ideas?
Listen, there's nothing wrong with Experts Exchange charging for it. I just think that they will always be at a competitive disadvantage against a site that makes it for free. I don't think there's any ethical problem with their charging, except for the fact that a lot of their users contributed that information, contributed those answers and those questions to the site under terms that they thought they were just sort of helping out the community, and later it became clear that they were just building a database. Anyway, I don't want to dwell on the competition.
Okay, I've always wondered about that. My feeling was that it was good marketing.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why I discovered Stack Overflow.
Mm-hmm.
Fair?
Was our good marketing, or
no? That you making it into more than just I've got a new site that's going to be free, but it's us versus them, or our way versus their payway helped you get my attention.
Yeah. Listen, there's so many programmers that have done their search for their programming question on the internet and found the number one result purporting to be an answer at Express Exchange, click through to that link and found out that they need to get out their credit card and sign up for a monthly subscription, that it became extremely easy for us to market Stack Overflow by just describing it as, you know, the free site where programmers get answers to their questions, as opposed to that other site where they don't because there's a paywall in front of it. So, it certainly helped us explain our message.
Here's something that I learned from you, and I think it was on Gregory Gallant's podcast. I didn't know that when I ended up on one of their pages looking for an answer and I couldn't find the answer, but instead I found a link to the pay section, I didn't know that if I just scrolled to the bottom, I could get all the answers on their site until you said it.
You can only do that if you come from Google.
Right.
So they're actually showing Google a different page. And if the referrer is Google, they'll show you that page. And that's just a part of their general sort of lack of concern over the quality of the internet and just generally kind of wanting to trick people into paying for something that they still want to be indexed by Google. You know, Google takes a pretty deep stance that if it's behind a paywall, they do not index it. And that's always been their policy. And so Experts Exchange has always been trying to kind of flirt with that.
Okay. All right. So the other thing you said earlier was you guys went from zero to 6.5 million in 2 years. I watched that growth on Hacker News. I watched it with the charts on compete.com. It just seemed like question and answers were just an easy way to grow a community. I created, when you guys opened up the platform to other people, I created my own little question and answer site. It grows faster than a blog, definitely faster than a blog, but zero to 6.5 million in 2 years, I'm not on the way to doing that with my community. Why did you guys grow so fast?
Having good quality answers, I guess, yeah. Just good answers. And there's a few reasons why we have good quality answers, and those go back to the design of the software itself. So it's things like the fact that you can vote on which answers are the best, the fact that there's a reputation system that prevents people from spamming and lets you know what the good answers are, the fact that it's a wiki so that every question and answer can be edited so it can be constantly improved, and all this, again, a bunch of other features there. There's basically nine of them. If you look for a video of me giving a speech at Google about Stack Overflow, if you search for that on the internet, you'll find my explanation of the nine key principles. And part of it was just bringing in that critical mass of the audience, and that's a theme I will return to later in this interview, which is that we brought in this huge mass of people who read Joel and Software, and Jeff Atwood brought in the people who read Coding Horror on the first day to make sure there'd be a pretty large mass. And you probably brought a lot of Mixergy people into your site, and that created sort of the initial audience. And eventually they start asking questions, getting answers, and Google finds that stuff right away, and then somebody types the same question into Google, and they find the answer, and they discover your site, and it continues to kind of grow like a snowball in that way.
Okay. All right. Let's talk then about the news. Can you say it now?
Sure. So obviously we started out with programming, and our only ambition was to make it easy for programmers to get answers to their questions. We slightly expanded at the seams a little bit by adding ServerFault, which is a site for system administrators, which is very closely related, and SuperUser was just a place for us to put all those computer questions that didn't really fit on a programming site or a system administration site. So those are the sites that we've been calling the trilogy, three sites that we made that basically are meant to get good quality information out there for programmers. At some point, we realized that we had accomplished our mission, and we looked for the next thing to do. And at the same time, both Jeff and I were frustrated that you would do a search on a programming question on the internet, and you'd find an answer on Stack Overflow, and it would be awesome. And then you do a search on your question about Siberian Huskies or using your iPod to best effect or a cooking problem that you were having or dentistry or whatever it was. And you'd find yourself in one of these BBS sites that's basically old style Usenet quality forums, discussion groups, where you basically, when you get your search result, all it is a conversation that people had. And you still have to read the conversation and decide what the right answer is and try every single one of those purported solutions to your doggy's diarrhea before you can actually get to the true answer. And Stack Overflow, it spoiled us. And, you know, on Stack Overflow, if you asked, why does my doggy have diarrhea, the number one answer would be the reason. And it would tell you exactly what to do. You weren't at the beginning of a research project. You were at the end. And so so we realized that this platform had applicability to so many other domains where people are looking for objective, factual answers to their specific questions, and they want expert answers. They don't want, you know, other people. They don't want the teenage girls that use Yahoo Answers as a chat environment, not really for answers or questions, but just a chat. They're looking for experts talking amongst themselves. And so we decided to kind of expand the mission a little bit. Our first effort to do that was called StackExchange, and I'm now referring to it as Legacy StackExchange up until today. And the idea was, hey, we got this great software that makes communities really work. Let's sell it. And we decided to sell it sort of as a service, hosted service, starting at $129 a month, where folks like you would come along and say, hey, I've got an idea, I've got an audience, and I've got $129 a month. Why don't you sell me the software and I'll build this awesome site? And that's where we were, and that's been in beta now since the beginning of September. Nice guy we hired here at Fog Creek Software, Aaron Manpa, started the development of that. He took the Stack Overflow source code and basically modified it so that it could be white labeled, so that you could customize the look and feel and create your own login mechanism and make it look like the rest of your website, a bunch of other stuff that we did. We've been in beta for 6 months. Over the course of those 6 months, we found a lot of successful sites have gotten created. My favorite is mathoverflow.net for PhD level mathematicians. If you go to mathoverflow.net, this is not like algebra questions from teenagers. This is PhD level or postdoc level mathematics. It's a really awesome site. It gets a lot of traffic. It's 3,500 registered users. It has fields in there. It's just an incredible resource for mathematicians that basically erupted on the StackExchange platform in about 2 months, that it went from zero to pretty much all of the mathematicians on the internet are on there right now. So there were some really exemplary examples of great Q&A sites that popped up with the StackExchange model. But there were so many other sites that opened and just became ghost towns. I mean, for every Math Overflow, there are 20 sites that have less than three users. Less than, not three or less, anyway. Basically, the founder and their cat are on there asking each other questions, and it's just not working. And what we realized essentially is that our StackExchange model required you to have you had to have three things to make a community. You had to have an idea, you had to have an audience, and you had to have $129 a month. And we weren't creating enough communities, and the communities weren't high enough quality, and they weren't getting audiences. So we kind of went back to the drawing board before StackExchange came out of beta, even before we charged anybody a penny. We went back to the drawing board. The Stack Overflow team came out here to New York, where the StackExchange team resides. We spent a whole week discussing, you know, what our strategy was, what our goals were, what our corporate visions were. We came up with a specific corporate goal, saying making the internet a better place to get expert answers to your questions. So there's a few keywords in there. One is our goal is to make the internet a better place to get answers. It's not to own those answers or to own anything. We're just trying to make the internet a better place to get answers to expert questions. So this isn't like, how do I be more popular? There's no expertise involved in how to be more popular. And that's the questions. Those guys can go to Yahoo Answers. It's not, how do I get lipstick out of my shirt? You don't need that much expertise for that. There's a million places to find that on the internet. It's the deep, dark, difficult programming questions and tax questions and Siberian husky puppy questions that you really need an expert to answer. So that is the new goal of the combined Stack Overflow, StackExchange team. And here's the change, and this is the announcement that we're making today. Number one, we don't want to limit ourselves to sites that from people who can pay $129 a month, because what we were doing is we were getting the entrepreneurial people that wanted to create sites and maybe try to make a business out of it. But we weren't getting the people that had a great idea for a site but maybe didn't want to pay for it. So the first thing that we did is we raised some venture capital, and I'm not going to announce that today. That announcement is forthcoming. But we raised some venture capital that gave us the confidence to say, you know what, StackExchange is free. It's absolutely free. We're not going to charge for it. We're never going to charge for it. So that was the first big change. The second change that we're making, we looked at the kind of StackExchange that were getting set up, and we didn't want a million ghost towns. And the biggest problem with StackExchange right now is that three people might set up a site to talk about SQL Server, three people might set up a site to talk about startups, and three people might set up a site to talk about Siberian Husky puppies. And while I'm all in favor of let 1,000 flowers bloom, when you do that with these sites that need critical mass, that need network effects, the result is that you get three small sites, none of which ever gets to critical mass. or never gets the right network effects. And these sites would be much, much more powerful if there was one question and answer site for startups, for SQL Server questions, and for Siberian Husky puppies, or maybe Siberian Huskies in general. So so what we decided is that rather than just letting anybody create a site by just typing in a title and creating a site, that we would create a democratic, community-driven process to decide which sites to create. And rather than letting anybody create a site that would then wind up being a ghost town, we tried to basically serve the community to find out if they could provide us with enough of an audience to make a site really get off the ground. So basically the second thing that we're announcing, besides that Stack Exchange is going to be free, is that the new Stack Exchange sites will get created through a community-driven process of discussion, a bunch of people talking about what other sites they might go to, and we're going to start with the existing audience of Stack Exchange, Stack Overflow, ServerFault, SuperUser. Those people, we got the audience. And rather than trying to create new communities from scratch, we're going to go to that audience and say, what else do you want to talk about? What else are you experts in? What else should we open a site about? And let them decide. And let's say somebody proposes Siberian Huskies. The next thing we're going to do is have a commitment process, probably a 1 week long process, where people come and sign up and say, yes, I would go to that site if it were to exist. And we'll try to see what level of commitment we get. And that commitment, we're actually going to look at the people, the actual people that say that they're going to commit to that site and what their reputation is on Stack Overflow, ServerFault, SuperUser, and all the other existing sites, and what kind of contribution they've made to those communities to try to judge if we've got enough critical mass to open a new community. And if we hit that threshold of what we think is enough critical mass to create a new community, we'll create that community on a basis. We need one for 2 or 3 months. If at the end of 3 months it still has a lot of traffic, it'll become a permanent community. It'll get its own top-level domain name. We'll get a graphic designer to design an awesome template for it, and the site becomes permanent. If it never gets to critical mass, we're going to close it, because a part of making the internet a better place to get questions is not to leave around these ghost towns where it looks like you can ask a question, but you're never going to get an answer. We're going to tidy up, and we're only going to leave around the sites where people can really get answers. So that's a whole lot that I just sort of crammed into one big long speech. Let me pause. Take a deep breath and let you ask me any questions you might have.
Let me make sure that I understand this first of all before I ask questions about it. The way it used to work is anyone who liked your site, your question and answer site, can go and create their own, kind of like with Posterous, where you can create your own Posterous, and you can either leave it at your subdomain.posterous.com or you can have it at your own domain. That was the way it was before, except you guys charged $125, I think it was, right? What you're saying now is to all the people who did that, that's not the way we're going to continue to work. You guys need to unwind your sites. What we're going to do instead... True?
Wait. No. We've created a new process for future sites. So I should clarify that the legacy Stack Exchange sites like yours that were already created, we're going to basically work with you to either transition or to continue or to move off the platform. We have a whole complicated program. So basically, we're trying to make the internet a better place to get answers to questions, experiences. If it's something that was on Stack Exchange 1.0, like, and a great example would be MathOverflow.net and a bunch of others, that where people are getting answers, we are not going to touch those sites. They can continue under the existing terms, except that we won't charge for them. We're not going to break any sites that already exist, because that would be making the internet a worse place to get expert answers to your questions. On the other hand, going forward, if you want to make a new site about sewing or couch potatoes or regular potatoes or Idaho potatoes, going forward, you will have to go through this community process and prove that there's a critical mass of people that want to talk about Idaho couch potatoes, in which case we'll create the site for free. Otherwise, we won't. So I want to distinguish between sort of legacy sites, which are going to be grandfathered under a fairly complicated system, which will shortly be up on our blog. Let's see if it has shown up there yet. Yes, go look at blog.stackexchange.com. And you'll see that we've basically got a system for the grandfathered sites, and we've got basically two community managers already standing by to talk to you about the transition if you've already built a Stack Exchange site. And those are Cornell and Robert.
Okay, and actually... I get that. I called up when I first got the email from you guys saying, hey, we're about to blog this. That's very generous of you to give us the heads up and to give us an opportunity to call in and ask any questions, which I did. And I was told that you guys won't really be developing my version of Stack Exchange, which is the legacy version now. That's what it's going to be called. But you're also not going to be discontinuing it. Just continue if you want, or if you want, you can also take our content and go to a different platform.
Right. So basically, we're dividing up. Let me just talk about the history of the source code, which is that about 8 months ago, we forked Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange. Probably a mistake in retrospect, but not worth going into. And so Stack Exchange has a bunch of enhancements, and Stack Overflow has a bunch of different enhancements. And that's the current status. Now, for legacy sites, we're probably going to give you a choice of staying on the old platform. You can kind of get some of the best of both worlds. It's sort of, the truth is, to be completely honest, it depends on the site. There's a lot of Stack Exchanges out there, not yours, but I've seen Stack Exchanges out there that just have no traffic. They get, you know, one or two visitors a day. Honestly, we'll keep them up for 3 months. We'll give them access to their data. We'll give them help and advice migrating to other platforms that implement similar functionality. We're not going to work that hard on supporting sites that only have 3 people going there a week. On the other hand, for the sites where people are actually getting answers, we do sort of want to cradle them. In some of those cases, people may be perfectly happy to take their site and essentially give it back to the community, make it stop being kind of an independent business and move it into the network of Stack Overflow sites, and there probably be some examples of that. That's one thing we can do, and then we can move you on to the new platform. The other thing we can do, as long as the site is getting good people is getting people good answers to their difficult questions, we'll try to keep it open as long as we possibly can, and that means pretty much, I don't want to say indefinitely, and I don't want to say that we'll never compete against it or somebody else won't make another site to compete against it. But like I say, we try to keep our promises that we've made in the past, and we try to, we don't want to damage communities.
How many active Stack Exchange sites are there?
There are, depending on how you define active, I would say there are probably between 20 and 40 where people do actually get answers to their questions, if you use that as a metric. So one metric we were using is, do you have 10 users that come to your site every day? That's about the minimum number of human beings that have to visit a site and actually be able to get people answers to their questions. There are probably about a dozen that are incredibly active where you get instantaneous answers. They're really awesome. There's another couple of dozen where you're likely to get a decent answer eventually, and those sites will probably grow. There's also a lot of ghost towns.
Wow, so only 20 to 40 sites with 10 active users. I really expect it to be bigger. And it's not bigger because you're saying there aren't enough people out there with a big enough community to seed these question and answer sites.
Right. Well, they need a coincidence of a big community to seed it, and they're willing to pay money for this thing in the past because we were charging money for it. And so they got the audience, the idea, the money, and those are the three things you needed. And we're kind of eliminating all of those problems by saying it's going to be free, the ideas are going to come from the community, and we're only going to create sites where we already have people talking, right? So rather than saying, I'll bet there's a lot of people that would like to talk about auto mechanics, we're going to go to our community, and today it's a lot of programmers, and we're going to say, what else are you guys interested? I'll bet you a lot of you are interested in talking about personal finance and auto mechanics and gaming and graphics cards and gadgets, and there's a whole bunch of topics that it's obvious there's going to be a lot of programmers that want to talk about. And over time, what I expect will happen is that the programmers will spawn new communities. Those communities will eventually develop their own audience of people who aren't programmers. Let's say the personal finance site, right? There's a lot of programmers that care about personal finance. They'll create the personal finance site. It'll be awesome. It'll start to attract all kinds of people from all over the place. Suddenly, the personal finance site will be its own big growing thing with a big audience of people that maybe some subset of them are interested in fashion, and they're going to create the fashion site. So eventually, we think that we can spread to a lot of other topics by starting with our audience. But the most important thing is not to just go out in the middle of nowhere and just say, hey, come look at me, make a site, but actually to take the core audience that we have and to continue to grow it rather than just trying to create new audiences.
So why didn't you go freemium? If money's an issue for your users, why not just allow anyone to create a site, and as long as they have under 1,000 users a day, they can use it for free, and once they get big enough, then they can start paying.
This is, we sort of had a staged system. I mean, it wasn't quite freemium. But when you do something like that, people look at that and they say, you're going to penalize me for being successful. I'll make the site, but I'm afraid that it works. And if it works, suddenly somehow I have to come up with this $129. And I can just slap some Google AdSense on there, but I don't know if that's going to work. And that's not, you know, this is not, I think that model to us makes a lot of sense because we're both entrepreneurs and we think like entrepreneurs and we think, hey, lots of people think like entrepreneurs. But there are also people out there who are just, you know, programmers in a company somewhere who are, you know, real experts on, you know, the art of raising Siberian Husky puppies. And they've raised 64 and they participate in the Iditarod and they, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they want to talk about that and they don't even want to think about the money. And they're just, that's going to immediately say, oh, never mind, I might have to pay. Or it might become big.
Why not just keep it free and let those guys create all the sites they want and have your own advertising in there?
Well, okay, we've actually been proposing that, and we've talked a little bit to our communities about like, hey, we'll bring you advertising. And the weakness there, I think, is that unless you have, and that's essentially what we're doing, but unless you have some kind of process to make sure that each community only gets created once, you're likely to get a lot of communities on the same subject.
But aren't there a lot of bulletin board sites on the same subject? Yeah. I know that when I do a search for a solution to a macro question I have, I come across nothing but vBulletin sites, and I can't understand how they all survive until I dig in deep and I see each one has its own character, its own approach to answers, its own community that's talking about getting together on the weekend or let's see pictures of your dog.
Yep.
Why doesn't that work?
Those
that
are
way
awesome
for Q&A sites.
I think that's awesome. I love those communities. I want those communities to continue to exist. Those communities are absolutely terrific. The trouble with Q&A, or let me narrow it down. Not Q&A in general. Let's look at expert Q&A. Let me just go to. I'm just going to go to Stack Overflow, our main site right now, StackOverflow.com, and I'm looking at a bunch of questions on the front page that have been recently answered. And some of them have, most of them, which had good, high quality answers, have been viewed less than 100 times. Some of them have been viewed like 5, 10, 15 times. The reason is that we're trying to get, we have probably about 600,000 questions right now on Stack Overflow. The reason we have so many questions is that, 600,000. The reason we have so many questions is that these questions are very, very narrow, very, 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 very specific. And that's why they're getting 50 views, 100 views each, you know, over their lifetime of that question. 100 people are gonna look at that. But it's the right 100 people. It's the 100 people that are having that exact, very specific problem. Like, I live on West 74th Street and my puppy keeps eating something in the street that's giving him diarrhea. I gotta find the other three people who walk their dogs on West 74th Street, and one of them might know that there's, you know, rat poison there that the city puts down. I don't know what it is, but to find those three people, you know, that's sort of an example of the extreme, extreme long tail of questions and answers, which are expert questions, and that's what we're trying to solve. And in order to solve that, you need a huge site, right? Just go smart, whatever. That's fine for asking the same questions that everybody's asking, or the easy questions like, you know, what's an easy startup question? Should I be an LLC or a C Corp? All right, that's, you know, you'll find 800 answers to that in the internet. But the real question is, I was organized as an LLC until April. And then in April, I switched to a C Corp, and it's a Cayman Islands corporation. And I want to know when I have to send the K-1 to the people who are members of my LLC who, you know, a question like that. You start to get really, really narrow. Somewhere out there are 12 people who have that same problem, and one of them did a heck of a lot of research to find the answer and can tell you what to do. And you got to find that one person out of 12. And for that, you need really, really big sites. And that's the reason why having 100 gardens just bloom is not going to get you answers to those questions.
I see a couple of people in the audience who have some questions about what's happening, and we'll come back and I'll explain it. In fact, why don't we explain it now? See if I understand this right now. There are 20 to 40 sites that are actively using the question and answer platform that is Stack Exchange. Those 20 to 40 sites, let's hold on the side. From now on, if you want to create a community on this question and answer platform, you can't just go off and do it on your own. Having money isn't enough to get you to do it. Having your own community isn't enough. Being able to buy your own domain isn't enough to do it. If you want to create your own community, you have to go within the Stack Overflow community and say, hey guys, why don't we all talk about this one subject? Let's all talk about the iPad. Who has questions about the iPad? Who wants to talk about it and answer questions about the iPad? And if a certain number of people, if there's enough interest in doing this, then you guys will create that site about the iPad. You'll run it out there for a few months to test it. If the demand holds up, you'll continue. If it doesn't hold up, you'll say, hey, you guys aren't really that interested in it. We'll pull back and we'll try something else. That's the way it's going to work in the future. These 20 to 40 sites, what they're telling us is contact them. They're going to work with you. I called them up myself. I said, what's going to happen to my site? Is it going to go down? They said, no, you can keep running it as much as you want. We'll help with critical updates, but we're not going to now make this into the next Mahalo Answers or Yahoo Answers for you. Right. We're just going to help you, support you. We're going to be there. You trusted us, and you trusted a good company. And really, I got to tell you.
Hey, you should come work for us.
I was really upset when I got that email and confused more than anything else. I read the PDF, and I never read anything that comes in my email that's more than four sentences. I read the PDF. I still was a little confused. So let me try calling him up. Guy didn't pick up the phone. I sent an email saying, hey, I tried calling. You weren't there. I get a nice email. I get a nice call right back. The guy walks me through and makes sure I understand it all. I'm used to thinking of you as the company, Joel. It is so nice to see that other people in the company live up to the expectation that you set for us.
Yeah. So, well, we've got actually two people who are literally, that is their primary responsibility right now. Robert Carteno, who many of you know from the Stack Overflow community from Metasites, has been hired as a community manager. Full-time working for Stack Overflow / Stack Exchange. Here on Stack Exchange, he's also sort of being a kind of community manager and liaison.
The video suddenly sped up as you were saying that. Let me say this too. I'm very understanding and I really appreciate how great you guys are. I don't know that this is the right decision or not to make. I'm not here to say, hey, Joel made the great decision here. It's too early, I think, to say. You guys are going to just keep feeling your way through this business until you discover what the perfect direction is. I wonder, though, how much of this is you and your company not really getting that consumer market? You're dead on with your audience of techies. But when it comes to even a startups.com site that's built for the general audience of entrepreneurs, they don't understand what OpenID is. They understand what Facebook login is. They don't understand about the difference between a comment underneath a question and answering the question on the bottom. It feels like it's just not in your DNA. How much of that is true?
Let me take those one at a time. The number one thing about OpenID, we've recognized, and that has always been the number one feature request of Stack Exchange, and one of the first things that we implemented was an alternate logon mechanism for those Stack Exchange sites other than OpenID. So that's definitely something that we've known, you know, from day one would be necessary the minute we moved out of the programmer ghetto. And the second thing that you mentioned was, wait.
That it's not in your DNA to talk to an audience that's not developers, that's not geeks.
No, but you had a specific thing that you said. The OpenID and then
Startups.com sort of I talked about. What do you guys say in the audience?
Gosh darn it. Somebody remind me what you said.
All right. Somebody in the audience, if I thought we hit it. If anyone in the audience caught it, help me understand. I was asking about my question. Maybe this will jog your memory.
Comments versus answers. That's what it was. Which is if people come to the site. And that is a big problem on Stack Exchange right now. You look at these smaller sites. There's a great one called Tax Queries. Doesn't quite have critical mass, I would say. But it does have a few reasonable people that know something about tax law. And you'll see that people don't really know how to use the comments versus the answers so much on that site. And we're specifically addressing that with this. Rather than going out to the tax lawyers and making a site for them and hoping that they get it, we're starting with a community of people that already know it. So when somebody proposes a new Stack Exchange site, we're not going to open it until we know that there's a critical mass audience of people who have already used Stack Overflow, Server Fault, and SuperUser. And we're going to look at the kind of badges that they have on ServerFault, Stack Overflow, SuperUser. We're going to look at the reputation they have on those three sites and try to figure out, hey, is there a critical mass of this new site of people that get how the software works? They know how to tag. They know what tags should be used for. They know what the difference is between a comment and an answer. They know to use answers. They know to vote for things. They know to vote for questions, not just answers, and all that kind of stuff. And that's the kind of stuff that's been a problem on Stack Exchange. And I think that problem will go away when we start building new sites with a community that already gets the software, certainly during the beta phase. So one part of this new process is that the site created in closed beta, they get seeded during a closed beta by the committers who committed to the early site before they're open to the general public. So in all of these areas, you're absolutely right. It's not in their DNA. And if you look at the popularity of sites, you've got Super Stack Overflow right here, and you've got sort of Serverfall to my on camera a little bit lower here, and you've got Super User also growing pretty fast. But the further you get away from that tentpole of programmers, which is my audience, Jeff Atwood's audience, the less draw we have and the less ability we have to draw people, and the less we understand it, frankly. And so rather than randomly going out and hoping to somehow create a site for Siberian Husky fans, we're going to try to create new sites where the existing audience can talk about other stuff and hope that in that way it will grow into the rest of the world.
Let me read what people are asking here in the comments or what they're saying. Andrew SG, who owns styleguidance.com, also built on Stack Exchange, says, how many programmers and tax accountants are the same person? I think what Joel is saying here is that if there aren't enough tax accountants within his current community, he's just not going to create that tax accountant site. And Sora's saying, isn't it limiting the way to start a site? Sora's just saying, essentially, would the Math Overflow site have been launched this way? Even though that's the biggest site, I think what Joel is saying is it may not be, even though it's the biggest site, they may have to not create that because it's just not in their DNA to create it, possibly.
Well, I'll take both those examples. Style Guidance, two sites that I love, by the way, Style Guidance, and not that I know anything about it, but every time I went to VCs and I pitched the company, I showed them Style Guidance to prove that this wasn't software that only worked for programmers. And I said, look at Style Guidance. And then he's like, well, but there are no objective answers in style. And he pointed to the question. It was like, you know, what goes well with the following black dress? And I said, those are objective questions. They're not subjective at all. That's the way style and fashion works. So Style Guidance is an awesome example. I don't think that site would have gotten created as quickly. I think that might have been a third generation site. So the programmers might create the gadget site, and the gadget lovers might create the consumer site, and the consumers might create the shopping site, and the shoppers might create the fashion site, and so on and so forth. So you can sort of hop from one to the other, and it might take several generations. In the case of Math Overflow, that was a big part of our inspiration. I talked to Anton, who created that site, and long before we had Stack Exchange, he was constantly trying to contact us and beg us to make a site about math. He thought this is the greatest idea. And what he did do is he went out and gathered a critical mass of mathematicians that he knew would participate in the site and made sure to get them all to jump in the site on the first day so they would talk to each other. And by having that critical group there at the same time on the first day when he emailed them all, it was only 30 people that were on his mailing list, I think. But by having 30 people come at the same time, immediately answering each other's questions, they created that snowball effect of critical mass, and they all looked around and said, whoa, this is working. And they immediately, some of them were bloggers, and they started blogging about it, and the site just sort of took off from there and really zoomed. And so I think under our new model, the same thing would happen. He would go on to that group and say, hey, how many of you are mathematicians? Probably a lot of programmers are mathematicians. Do we have enough people here? He would propose it. We would look. We would see that there are 30 committed people. We would see that they, you know, had the skills to make it work, and we probably would have opened it.
Joel, I think I see now how it works. If you guys have any questions about the process in the audience, please ask. Moses, I know you had a question. I missed it in the chat. Please ask it again. I discovered you because the person who I look to for guidance in business, Seth Godin, said he looks to you when it comes to development. Joel on software, Joel Spolsky has been the teacher and leader here. How does it feel to have to admit publicly that a direction that you went in wasn't the right direction?
Oh boy, I have, wow. This is fun. The number of mistakes that I've made are in Fog Creek. I mean, we've created products that didn't work. We created products that were sort of underwhelming. We've created products that went absolutely nowhere. My absolute favorite product that I created was the Indian version of the Joel on Software Programmer job listing board. We made 50 rupees off of that with two job listings for programming jobs in India. That was probably the biggest and most grotesque failure, and I was very excited about that, and I thought it was going to be huge. I mean, think how many programmers are in India trying to get jobs. And we only charge 25 rupees instead of what we charge now, which is 350 US. So The number of mistakes I think is great. And I think every business is a part of trying to find the right model. And you sort of try one thing out and you see where it's failing and you kind of tack to a different direction. And I think in this case, we're kind of lucky that we were able to figure out that it wasn't working and change model before we had taken a penny from people. And so the truth is that, some people are going to feel like we moved their cheese, but at least they're not paying customers.
Why do you need funding for this? For this business model? If it's going to be a slow growth, if it's going to be organic, if it's going to be using the technology that you have and speaking to the audience that you already have, why do you need funding?
Well, the first thing is that we don't want to limit our growth by the amount of cash that we have in the bank. We also have a belief that we share with our investors that, and you can look at some other similar companies like maybe Twitter, Facebook, and Google, where the idea was, let's just make it big. And I know this sounds like a dot-com 1.0 thing, but we know that we can make this thing big. And if we make it big, an organic revenue model will emerge that will pay for this thing. And it's not that expensive, but you have to make it big first, because there's certain kinds of things that you can only do when you have all of the mathematicians, all of the programmers, all of the, just to give you a simple example, if you have a fashion website that talks about style guides for clothes on Fed, and you go to those advertisers who are advertising in Vogue, they're not going to talk to you. They don't have any time to talk to you. They've never heard of you. They're not going to advertise there. The best you're going to get is some AdSense, and you're going to get 1 cent CPMs, and it's a big waste of time, and the AdSense is going to be all wrong, little text ads that aren't really related to the content of the page, and it's very hard to monetize that. On the other hand, if you have a website like some of the Condé Nast properties, style.com or something that's a top number, the top five style/fashion destination on the internet, then you are all of a sudden start to see that your advertising model becomes much more valuable, much more robust, and you have kind of far more opportunities to get those advertisers. What happens? And in the advertising world, and I'm not saying that advertising is necessarily our model, but what happens in the advertising world is that the national advertisers, really only the big brand advertisers, they want to advertise in about 10 or 15 places that they've heard of. And so you have
you're going to grow organically. You've already proven that you can develop multiple sites at once with multiple managers. Unless you're thinking of buying advertising or finding new ways to bring people in, where does the money go?
Well, right now it goes to buying servers and paying for bandwidth and paying for people to develop this platform without charging anything for it.
I see.
that still takes some money. I mean, it's very cheap these days to build.
But it sounds like you're gonna develop it organically, yeah. Which means it'll take a while for people to create the new sites. It'll take a while for to develop.
There's organic, and then there's like fast organic and slow organic. I mean, we're not talking bootstrapping like Fog Creek, which took 10 years to get to where we are today. We're talking about continuing to grow at the same speed Stack Overflow has been growing, which is basically 0 to 6.5 million in about a year and a half. If we continue at that rate even linearly, we're going to need another half dozen servers. We're going to need a $40,000 SQL Server database machine of some sort. We're already pushing an awful lot of bandwidth, and that's just with text. And we'd sort of like the opportunity to be able to do things kind of in a big way without really worrying too much about the money. If there's somebody great that we want to hire, if you're out there listening to the show and you want to work for us, we're going to be hiring a whole bunch of people. We can just hire them without having to think about, let's wait 6 months to hire them until we have like a little bit more money. And if there's certain things that are frankly distractions, we don't have to be distracted by them. Right now, getting advertising on Stack Overflow is a bit of a distraction. We can stop being distracted by that and just say, to hell with it, whatever. Advertising shows up on there, awesome. If it doesn't, let's just wait.
And that's part of the issue.
We don't have to build advertising out on the new sites for a long time. Until.
From what I've read on the blog, part of the issue is that you haven't figured out a way to bring in revenue. You've experimented with Amazon ads. You've experimented with Google ads.
Okay, wait. Let me stop you. This is absolutely not true. The company up until now has been very profitable. We're cash flow positive, actually, I shouldn't really reveal that number, but we've been profitable and people have been taking salaries and it's been awesome. And that's based on a couple of sources of revenue right now. The advertising that you see on the site, which is doing a nice job, and the career services that are behind Stack Overflow, which most people don't even know about, where we help find those expert programmers jobs. And so we are cash flow positive. We continue doing that, but the main reason for a VC raise right now is to have a buffer so that we can stop worrying about that stuff and we don't have to slow down because of revenue problems. But it is absolutely not true that we don't have a business model.
Okay, and is this going to become more like Jason Calacanis' Mahalo question and answer site? I've noticed now that he started to create these offshoots like the This Week in Tech question and answer site and one for the iPad and others. And all the data that goes into those sites gets pulled right back into the main Mahalo question and answer site.
I can't really speak to what Mahalo is doing. There are an enormous number of Q&A sites out there. There's a lot of question and answer technology. There's a lot of people trying to do this exact thing in all kinds of different ways. Some of them are awesome. I'm a big fan of Jason Calacanis. I can't really speak to what they're doing, what their particular strategy is. I do think that we have the fastest growing Q&A site and the only one that gets detailed, deep technical answers on the very, very difficult, long, long tail questions that only 40 people in the world care about. That we're the only site that answers those questions.
Let's see. Okay, so Moses in the audience, he has a Stack Exchange site. It's called answers.monogiggle.com, and he's asked me a couple of times to ask you, what's going to happen to his site? How will it affect sites like mine? My goal is to build a community. Hopefully, we'll convert into paying customers.
Right. I'm not familiar with that site. There is a blog post up right now at blog.stackexchange.com. If you scroll down to the FAQ, there's very detailed specifics about what's going to happen to various sites. And like I said earlier, if that doesn't immediately answer your question, or if that answers it in a way that doesn't make you happy, we got two people to talk to, and we'll discuss what to do going forward.
What about startups.com? We know that they've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in this platform. They're really building it up and building a business on top of it. And they want to know that I talked to the founder. He wanted at the time when he started the site to know that in the future there'd be Facebook integration. He had all kinds of ideas for the site. Now none of those are going to happen.
Well, they might if he moves his site onto the new platform.
But then he can't control his own advertising, right?
Like I say, he should contact us.
Okay, you guys.
That's basically what we're. Yeah, look, we're working with people. We have what I'll repeat, and I say this a few times in the FAQ. At sites where people are getting good answers to their questions, we don't want to do anything to break those sites. Our goal is not to own as much of the Q&A on the internet as possible.
But the fact that you guys, there's a lag. No, I hate Skype for these issues. I wish I was in your office, Joel, and we'd just be able to sit and talk like human beings, not like, I don't know what this is, CB radio truck drivers. But the fact that you guys aren't
going
to be building this out does put his business in an uncomfortable position.
Yeah.
True.
Well, I mean, I've said this to people at the beginning of time, if you're going to build your business on a piece of technology that you bought or acquired from somewhere else, you really should make sure that it does what you need. And if it does what you need, awesome, go ahead and use it. If it doesn't do what you need today, then if you are imagining that one day it might have Facebook integration or something like that, and you're going to build a business on the hope that some other businessman someday decides that it's a good idea to implement that Facebook integration, there's a weakness in your business model right there. I don't want to say that there isn't his, but the point that I really want to come back to is that our corporate goal is very, very specific. It's to make the internet a better place to get questions answered, expert answers to your questions. And that means that if there is some community out there like Siberian Huskies that is using vBulletin or PHBBB or one of those awful old school technologies to get people answers to their questions, it's just not working, and we want to replace that with something better. However, if there is a community, a good example might be doctype.com, which is using not our software, but a clone of our software, and is actually getting people good answers to their questions. We don't have the goal of stealing their business or taking over or owning that particular segment of content. Our goal is that we get answers now in the startup space, which is your Stack Exchange, startups.com, Dharmesh and Jason on answers.onstartups.com. There's already three of those sites. I wish there was one, but there's three of them. And frankly, that's the last area that we need to go into to make a fourth Stack Exchange site. And that's just not a corporate mission. Our corporate mission is to make sure people get answers. And we're going to put our effort into other communities that that have asked for it. I think what would happen if the community said, hey, what do you want to talk about? And a bunch of people said, startups, there would be a lot of people on there saying, hey, there's already a great startup Stack Exchange. There's no need to make another one.
Guys, if you have any questions, put them in the comments, but please make them comments, not statements, because it's hard for me to read your statements and rephrase them as questions. I don't want to just give him your points or understand your points here now live.
I will read them immediately after this video.
Moses is asking, who survives, startups.com, answers.onstartups.com, or foundersmix.com? I never thought of my site as being in that startup space. I wanted a place for us to ask questions. I said, you know what? I really like the conversation that's going on Joel's sites. Let's see if we can do it in a question and answer, if we can have our community in a question and answer format instead of just a bunch of people making statements at each other. Let's see, Joel. It does raise an issue here with the cloud. I used Ethernet for my transcripts. Ethernet was sold to Google.
Etherpad,
right. Ethernet is the cable I'm talking to you on. It was sold to Google. I can't create new pads on it after 2 days from now or something like that. It's gone. What happened recently? Somebody creates an app on top of Facebook. Facebook decides to adjust what goes into the status feeds. The business is gone. We're all being transitioned into the cloud, but I feel like some of us are going to get tossed off the cloud and on our face. This is a tough place to build our environment on, other people's platforms.
You nailed it.
How do we protect ourselves? Is there a way to protect ourselves?
It sort of depends. And this is something actually, there was a discussion here, and I'm getting off the reservation here, not really thinking about this from a Stack Overflow point of view, but Fred Wilson wrote a blog post recently about Twitter, and then it turns out that they were announcing something that it turns out he must have had in his mind. Yeah. But basically, if you are a platform developer, and it is obvious that if you are a small fry, and you're looking at these platform developers and you say, they have a hole in their platform, I'm gonna go fill that hole, you're in a dangerous position. You are snatching nickels out of in front of an oncoming bulldozer, right? You're gonna get a few nickels, but at some point you're gonna get bulldozed, because if Twitter is gonna be successful, it has to have an iPhone client. It's just inevitable. It has to have URL shortening. It has to have the ability to attach pictures. That stuff is such an inevitable part of the Twitter roadmap. The fact that they couldn't build it right away, well, it's great that they have an API, but they're gonna do it. Go build something different. Maybe use their platform in a way that adds value to them rather than kind of tries to steal a little value from them while adding value to them. Because otherwise, what you're looking at is a very, very risky business proposition.
Yeah. I like the bulldozer analogy. That is what it feels like. You're grabbing nickels from an oncoming bulldozer. Facebook will eventually create its own virtual currency. They will create its own OfferPal, and all these other businesses are going to just have to deal with it, it seems like. And situation like yours, it's not the same. People are asking in the audience, is that what you're saying about Stack Exchange? No, it's not the same at all. It just didn't work out. I think it's more similar to Etherpad. Etherpad tried an approach. The approach didn't work. Those of us who were on it needed to understand that it was new technology and there were risks, and maybe that's the answer. To just understand that it's great to have startups, but sometimes you can't build your business on top of startups because they're still trying to figure things out. Think about all the people who are using Seismic in their comments, and suddenly you just don't have it. Seismic video in their comments.
Right.
Okay, I think I've gotten to all the questions from the audience. Joel, any last word from you? Do you miss blogging, Joel? Do you want to come back to Mixergy and blog once a week with me? You do video like this. You're perfect at it.
I would 5 times a week. No, I don't. You know what? Somebody came up to me this morning. If you're watching this is even worse. But somebody came up to me this morning as I was walking my dog and said, excuse me, are you Joel? And I said, yeah. This happens to me all the time. And he's like, I recognize your dog. That's Taco, right? I'm like, now my dog is more famous than I am. Anyhow, I do not miss having random strangers walk up to me and recognize my dog and say, that must be Joel Spolsky, famous pet.
That's the beauty of doing just video like this.
I recognize his puppy.
We can't get a headset on your dog, so he's not welcome on Mixergy. You and I will do once a week conversations with Joel. It'll be Joel on video. Somebody get that domain name. We'll figure it out.
The only thing I want to mention is, if you do have specific questions, meta.stackexchange.com will be all over it, announcing them. And again, if you made a Stack Exchange site, like I say, just contact us. It's not so bad. It's not terrible. Bad things won't happen. We're not going to turn anything off tomorrow. There's stuff that we can leave running kind of indefinitely if you really want. We're not making any promises that we can, but we never made any promises that, you know, I can't tell you right now, I'm going to continue to develop a product that has no market for the next, you know, unforeseen future, you know, adding new features to it that only 16 people really
want.
Who
do you recommend people go over to? Should they go over to Sponge at getsponge.com, to Oska.net, the people are saying in the audience? I know the people at Hacker News built a clone of your site. Is there one that you recommend people use if they want to transition?
I don't really know anything about that. Probably by the time we start asking people to transition, we will have figured out which one of those has emerged as a good alternative that we can sort of honestly say we recommend. We don't see ourselves as being in the software business. There are open source implementations and not open source implementations of clones. None of them are as good as what we have today. They're all kind of behind. But I think by the time we start asking people to transition, one of those will have emerged. And if we're actually saying, hey, get off and go somewhere else because we can't run your server, I think there will probably be a reasonable alternative at that point.
Okay, and just to be clear, you're not saying that you're going to say that anytime soon. You're not telling people who are listening to this that you're going to kick them off your server soon.
No.
They continue. Presumably, if you've got one of these smaller sites, you don't have much action anyway, and somebody needed to say, hey, it's time to end the site. And you were thinking of doing it anyway, and if they were going to charge you, were going to end the site anyway, this is maybe the kick that you needed. Can I say that? Is that insensitive of me to say?
Sure, and that's what we expected. What we actually expected is of the hundreds of sites that have gotten created, hundreds of them are not going to care. They're just going to say, you know what, it wasn't working, I'm going to close. You know, and some smaller percentage of them are going to say, hey, it was working, and we're going to want to reach out to you to make sure that it continues to work. And there's some people in the middle, and that's why, you know, we'll talk to you and we'll negotiate and we'll figure out what to do to keep you going.
Joel, this would have been such a great interview if what I would have done was we're now 57 minutes into the conversation, if I would have said, Joel, you screwed up, well, you screwed us. You know, and fought you on this a little bit, but
hey,
the reason
I
don't
you're
is
a journalist.
I'm too freaking curious about business and what goes on behind the scenes, and I think that because of that, I earned your trust and I got you, even though there's so much going on today. And I emailed you just before my last interview and said, "Do you mind coming on here on Skype?" That I know that you feel and other entrepreneurs feel like this is a place to safely, fairly come on and talk about what's going on. And I'm glad and grateful to you for doing it last minute with so much going on, and I'm glad that I could become a forum for that.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me on short notice. It's cool to you've got the scoop here on the new Stack Exchange plan. So congratulations.
I'm still getting traffic from that Juju interview. That Juju may not have gone anywhere for the founders of the Juju pad, but it's doing great for me. People found me through that. Now who knows what this news is going to do for me.
All right, cool.
All right, sorry, Joel. Where can people talk to you if they want to? Where can they find you? They all know your website. I don't even know how to end this by giving you the last word.
JoelOnSoftware.com or meta.stackexchange.com if it's about Stack Exchange.
All right, and I'll see all of you guys on Stack Overflow, where I'm a member too. Bye.